Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
My new book, Trump Aftershock, has just released and excitement is high, and I've been going all over the country doing interviews about the book. And as you know, if you've been listening to the Strang Report the last few days, I've been sharing excerpts or sometimes the entire program when I was on these different stations. One of the very first interviews that I did on this go-round was with Don Black at Cornerstone TV in Pittsburgh. We played actually an entire program, but then he recorded several clips in which we did a segment that he is putting in shows coming up. And I thought that they were very interesting and that they would make great podcasts. So without further ado, here is Don Black talking to me again about Trump Aftershock.
Stephen, God moves in mighty ways. And, you know, we've just talking about his hand of God. And your book, Trump Aftershock, it talks about revival. And some of the revivals that may be connections that very few people know about. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, when I write a book like Trump Aftershock, I try to tell stories. And they're well-researched stories, of course. And I try to write in such a way that it helps people, I say, to connect the dots, mm-hmm. to see the picture for what's happening. So as we were writing the book, I was finishing it in June of this year. And if most of your viewers will remember that June was when there was that big summit in Singapore between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. And as I was researching, I found out that there was a mighty revival in Korea in 1909. And I think maybe I'd heard about it, but didn't pay much attention. And what happened was this. You know, Korea is mainly a Buddhist country, and many, many people, probably several million people, became Christians, mostly Presbyterian. Now, today, the Korean Christians would tend to be either Presbyterian or Pentecostal, but this was, you know, I think the Azusa Street Revival was still going on in 1909. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the significance of it is that Kim Jong-un's great-great-grandfather was swept into the kingdom of God and became a Presbyterian minister. His son, Kim Jong-un's great-great or great-grandfather, was a Presbyterian elder. His son, who is Kim Jong-un's grandfather, who was the dictator who brought communism to Korea, mm-hmm. was raised as a Presbyterian.
Wow.
And he obviously rejected Christianity, rejected Christ, became an advocate of communism, during the Second World War, and, you know, fought the Korean War and brought communism to Korea. And Christianity was centered in Northern Korea mm-hmm. back in that era, much more than, of course, there was only one Korea back then. And so now it's one of the most repressive regimes in the world mm-hmm. against Christians. Back then, there were several thousand churches. Today, there are two, and both of them are sort of for propaganda purposes. Pyongyang, which is the capital, was called the Jerusalem of Asia because the revival was so great. Now, fast forward to 1948, which is actually the year that the Korean War started. There was another great revival. This was on the other side of the world. It was in the Hebrides Islands, which is a part of Scotland. It went on for about 3 years. And the story, you know, that your viewers can research this. There's a lot of documentation. It was started by two old women named Peggy and Christine Smith. They were too sick to go to church, mm-hmm. too old, so they prayed. They prayed that God would send revival to the Hebrides Islands, and there was a massive revival. They say that virtually every person in that part of the world was affected by that revival in a positive way. So much so that the Hebrides Islands were called the Jerusalem of Europe. Same term.
Wow.
Now, the research in my book says two things. There are some people who say that those two old women were Donald Trump's great aunts, because Donald Trump's mother her maiden name was Smith, and no, her maiden name was McLeod. Her father, her grandfather's name was Smith. She had already moved to America. She moved in the 1930s. but her family was definitely impacted by that revival. There are others who say that it's apocryphal, that it's not true. Whether or not the Hebrides revival would have affected all of Scotland, and his mother was raised a very devout Presbyterian. They were God-fearing people. She raised Donald Trump as a Presbyterian. He was confirmed in the Presbyterian Church. She gave him a Bible that he values today. In fact, in my book, God in Trump Aftershock, there's actually a picture of him holding up the Bible, and it's you know, very personal to him. He actually took the oath of office with two Bibles, that Bible and Lincoln's Bible.
I saw that. I remember that, the inauguration with him with the two Bibles. In your research, now as a journalist, you go pretty deep into the waters, research-wise. How much do you see that's spiritual in its nature when you look at, you've given us a couple samples of the spiritual nature of what the book reveals. How much of it is spiritual in your estimation?
Well, as a Christian, don't we believe that everything's spiritual? Don't we believe that the spiritual world is as real as the natural world? In our culture, does not reinforce that. So you don't hear that in school. You don't hear it on TV. People don't talk about it very much if you get outside of church circles. So I try to look at things how I think it should be looked at, as spiritually. Like, what is God doing? What is God saying? This was the purpose of God in Donald Trump. Did God have a will? Is God involved in the affairs of men? And it's been spiritual with other presidents as well. God has raised up, and we even recognize it sometimes. Don't we believe that God raised up somebody like Patton at the time we needed him? Don't we believe that God raised up Winston Churchill? In fact, Winston Churchill, as a youth, felt that God had destined him to save Western civilization. And Winston Churchill was not very perfect. And of course, a lot of people like to point out that Donald Trump's not perfect either, and he's not. But neither am I, and neither are you. None of us are perfect. But I believe that God has used this unlikely man for a very important time. And I just find it interesting about these parallels with revival. Mm-hmm. Kim Jong-un's grandfather was raised a Presbyterian. Donald Trump was raised a Presbyterian. These are things that most people don't know. And I tried to bring it out in my book.
Well, when you think about that, God is sovereign and he directs the paths of all men. And then you talk about the two women who prayed. It tells me that we as Christians have a duty and an extreme responsibility to pray and to fast and to be engaged in our culture. And I know you're actively involved in the culture. How do you encourage somebody to do that, Stephen, to be able to, we're heading into the midterm elections, as Christians. Some Christians don't feel like it's something that they need to be involved with. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, they need to have a Christian worldview and to realize that as Christians, we need to speak up, or else we're going to let the other side win.
That's right.
And there's always been, you know, a tension between good and evil, between right and wrong, between Christianity and secularism or whatever else, paganism or whatever. But it seems like it's accelerated, and I think it's gotten worse and worse. In fact, Kenneth Copeland told me that one of the reasons we're in the mess we're in is because Christians have been silent all the way back to the 60s when the Supreme Court took prayer out of school.
I think so.
And we're at a point now where we have got to stop it from going any further.
That's right.
And the midterms are very important. We saw with the Kavanaugh hearings what will happen if the I'm going to call them leftists. It's not even Republican and Democrat.
No, it's
really far leftist, and they have an agenda, and they're showing their true colors, and we have an opportunity to stop them at the ballot box.
I thank you for coming on Cornerstone, and thank you for showing your true colors and writing this exciting book.
Thank you.
And you'll be with us all this week, so I'm looking forward to our next time together.
You've got a very nice style, interviewing style.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You would have been a good newsman.
I was back in the day.
Were you?
I was a stringer,
ABC
guy.
Walter Cronkite type.
Water?
Of course, Walter Cronkite was pretty liberal, but
he was very
by
liberal.
Today's standards, he'd be considered middle of the road.
What was his sign off every night?
And that's the way, it is.
And that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. What's our next topic?
Focus on Trump's accomplishments. So part of the aftershock is his accomplishments and what's been happening.
I like the way we did that and tied it in at the end as a kind of a rallying point for people who maybe stir them up a little bit. Mm-hmm. See, I've got to be careful on how far I go down that path, and I do it because I have people that are Democrats and Republicans. So I like the leftist mark. I think that's a great distinction. But I don't go Republican, Democrat per se, you know, because...
Well, my view is the Republicans aren't a whole lot better. You know, the deep state Republicans.
That's it. That's it right there, the deep state
but
Republicans.
We have no option. The Republicans at least give lip service to what we want.
Well, on their platform is not abortion.
Right.
And so that's a litmus test for me. I have to be true to that. I can't support anybody or anything.
But the Republicans are becoming more the party of Trump.
Seems like it.
So how are you...
You ask and you shall receive. I don't know why you took the labels off. You think we were going to have them on camera?
I just was handed them this way.
Now for sequencing, just the previous show, you talked about the midterms, which is great. This is election day. This will be November 6th.
Oh, today?
On this show.
Oh.
For this segment.
So what's going to happen?
I thought he said it'd be the week before the election.
It's the week of. It's the couple days before.
So this is Tuesday.
This will be election day.
So the one we just did was Monday?
It's fine.
November 5th.
Right.
Well, can't we put that one in behind this one? Or is it too late? We're only going to have 2 days.
It's already this next week.
Oh, so we might as well just do this one.
There's a blank week between. There's this week, and then there's a whole week, and then the election's the next week. So I was under the impression you were going to do it next week, but it's going to be the week after.
The week after, yes.
Okay, that's fine.
We've already recorded that.
So then we only need to do two before the election. One today.
Yeah, this is day of election.
This is election day.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Well, we can do some more because the story.
The viewers will just wonder how I could be on the 700 Club and Cornerstone on the same day.
On our same network.
That's right. That's amazing.
How do you do that? The magic of television. Okay. So what do we talk? What's our topic here?
Trump was. We were planning on doing Trump's accomplishments, and then Dave brought up that this will actually be airing.
So which of those would be best for the election day? Let's talk about the bad stuff. We have to go to the polls to stop it.
Okay.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay, so I'm going to say, hey, this election day.
Of course, then the other ones, we won't know the outcome of the midterms, although I think it'll be okay.
Right. But talking about the accomplishments, what's happened so far.
I was telling Don in the book, I don't talk about the midterms.
Sure.
Because there's no reason to speculate because they'll be over when the book comes out.
Oh, yeah.
It comes out.
On election day.
So the book will also be coming out when this airs, what we're about to do.
Well, that'll be a point for the third interview. We're after the election, but this book is not about the election. Yeah, that'll be, but this gets us into go vote.
Yeah.
Today's your day to go vote. And that, the bad stuff, you'll take the bad stuff.
Yep.
Okay, we're ready.
Stand by. 5, 4, 3.
See, there's consequences to actions. We all know that. You know, there's good when we do good. There's evil when we do evil. What kind of consequences are we looking at in regards to today? Today is election day.
You know, I think that if the Democrats win the House and the Senate, it's going to be very serious for our country because during the Kavanaugh hearings, they showed their true colors. They just showed that they're just against everything. They just want to impeach the president. They're even saying they'll impeach Justice Kavanaugh, which I don't understand. Impeachment is for something you do while you're in office, not something, you know, they brought up something from, you know, when he was in high school, which was pretty much proven to be false, but they still want to do this. And, you know, I have always been fairly neutral because both parties, in my opinion, have lots and lots of faults. Mm-hmm. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's hard to tell the parties apart, except mm-hmm. on a couple of issues. Mm-hmm. But the Republicans will support Donald Trump, And of course, I write about Trump aftershock and all the things that have happened. And there are good things and things that aren't so good. And by not so good, the very first chapter I call Capital Psychosis, which is psychosis in the Capitol, Washington, of how the left just went crazy when he won. Of course, they expected Hillary Clinton to win. They almost felt like she deserved to win. Yeah. And they all these protests and the rioters and the demonstrations in other cities. Isn't it interesting how it happened just like that? Right. And there's evidence to prove that rich billionaires, including George Soros, were behind that. Mm-hmm. And I document some of that in the book. In fact, there's a whole chapter that I call A Billionaire Radicals, because it's more than just Soros. There's this guy, Tom Steyer, and others, and it's more than them just funding mobs of people. They're funding organizations that go along with this far-left agenda. And and we say far-left, it's so far-left, it's really socialist. That's right. In fact, they're starting to use the term socialist. You know, one of the Democratic candidate for governor of my state of Florida, being elected today, calls himself a socialist. I never thought I'd live to see the day.
You know, that's strange to me, too, that socialism becomes in vogue when it's failed everywhere it's been tried.
Everywhere. And in my book, I quote somebody that says socialism is communism. Socialism is communism without a gun. And I thought that was kind of a humorous way to think about it. It really is communism. And communism even fell in Russia and the Eastern Bloc nations. And look at what happened with Cuba and Venezuela. Yet somehow it's come in vogue. And we've really got to turn the tide and keep the accomplishments that Donald Trump has been doing, keep them going, and move our country in a different direction.
Well, you know, you mentioned that the Republicans support President Trump. Not all Republicans do. The deep state Republicans, which are embedded into the bureaucracy of Washington, they're not. They're part of the good old boy system. I think they get together with the Democrats and whoever else, and they have their back parties where they really pull the strings, and Trump doesn't play in that party.
You know, it's an interesting. A lot of these people are elected. They get to Washington. They've never earned a lot of money. That's and right. After 5-10 years, they're millionaires. You know, this has happened with Elizabeth Warren. It's happened with Maxine Waters. It's happened with a lot of them, the Republicans and Democrats.
Seems to be an epidemic of wealth.
That's right. And after they're out of office and they become consultants and lobbyists, and there's something very deep. However, the real power is with the presidency and the Congress and how they vote.
And the Supreme Court, hate to interrupt you, but in the Supreme Court, too, because those men and women are there for life.
And look what Donald Trump has done. He put in Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. A couple of the justices are very old, and while we don't wish them any harm, they can't live forever. Mm-hmm. And I think that he'll have one and maybe even more appointments to the Supreme Court. And here, Brett Kavanaugh was a pretty much sort of a middle-of-the-road George W. Bush kind of Republican. And very well respected by people in Washington, by the status quo. And look what they did to him. Amazing. If he had put in a really, really, really conservative justice, a nominee, I mean, who knows what would have happened?
Well, thank God that God is in control. Even though men think that they're actually the power brokers, God places the kings in place. The scripture tells us that. And so we as Christians, though, now that doesn't take us out of the responsibility of being good American citizens and doing what we've been told to do is pray and to fast and then go out and vote.
Well, the book actually releases today officially.
On election day.
We didn't deal with the midterms because, of course, it'd be old news when the book releases. But I think it's significant that today is Election Day. I've already voted. I hope we can vote early in Florida. And we need to encourage all your viewers to go out and vote. People have died for our right to be able to vote. And we need to get good, conservative, God-fearing people who feel like you and I do, motivated to go vote, because right. A lot of people stay home and think, well, somebody else will do it. But we cannot be We cannot be silent in a time like this. We have to vote, and we need to vote for conservative people who will stand with the kind of values that we have.
Well, and I don't know. We're not talking about eschatology in this interview, but in my personal belief, we're towards the end of the age, and what we do today is amplified. So our nation needs to be strong for the gospel's sake, so that we can take the gospel to the world. That's why we're strong and given this ability to be
strong.
That's
right. America supports Israel and spreads the gospel more than any other country. And I believe that that's one of the reasons why God has blessed America.
And it's because of President Trump's stand on Israel that I believe he's going to continue to bless this nation. And we want that aftershock from a good perspective to continue. We want you coming back here with the next book about the aftershock.
There are a lot of good aftershocks, too.
Yeah, that's what I think so, too, is we start seeing the freedom of our faith being given back to us and our ability to speak out as Christians and be Christian citizens. That's very, very important. So as people get ready to go to the polls, I encourage you to go out right now, today, and don't miss this opportunity to let your voice be heard. Because if you don't allow your voice to be heard, somebody else's voice is going to tell you what to do.
And the polls are open until 7 p.m. most places. And even encourage your family and friends to go vote. If you know some senior citizens who can't drive, offer to drive them to the polls.
That's good.
We really need to turn out the vote in a way that hasn't happened in most midterm elections.
Well, we're culminating today 21 days of prayer and fasting. We have thousands and thousands of people been praying for 21 days, and we're going to watch God's hand at work. Don't know what's going to happen? Never do. Stephen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
That's a good one. That's a keeper. Now let's go to the third one. We're halfway home. Where are we going to now, Mr. John?
So we can talk about what accomplishments have happened so far.
Okay. Now, this is the day after the election. So we're going to have to kind of be warm and fuzzy about whatever happened. You know, God's in control. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
This is really snuck up on us time-wise. The election today, we're taping for the election day. Wow.
Well, what we did earlier today, airs today, but with the week with Mark Driscoll, airs next week, and this is going to be the following week. So
for the first show.
For the first show, yeah.
We do two shows a day when we tape. Tape one for today, and then one for the week from today. So you're actually in a week from today's program. No way. No, he was in today's program.
Next week's program.
Next week.
So we got you for 2 weeks in a row on Monday.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's real good.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We live 2 weeks at a time every other week, and it gets really confusing really fast.
What's up? Thank you.
We're talking about the accomplishments. Is that what we're talking about?
Stand by. 5, 4, 3.
Stephen, many people look at the Trump presidency and they see it through two different filters, the filter of the negative and then the filter of the positive. Let's talk about the positive for a minute. From a Christian perspective, what are some of the aftershocks that are positive for us?
Well, I deal with this in my book, Trump Aftershock, and I use this as kind of a word picture that his election in 2016 was like an earthquake. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw it coming. In fact, I saw something on the news recently that somebody said that he hadn't even written an acceptance speech. Now, I happened to be in New York on election night at his victory party. I heard his very gracious acceptance speech, but apparently he had to write it at the last minute. I can't really believe that because I think he did think he was going to win. I thought he was going to win because I could tell that people in America were desperate for things to change. Mm-hmm. And if he had done nothing but stop Hillary Clinton and then been a do-nothing president, in my opinion, he would have accomplished something great. Mm-hmm. However, he has accomplished more. You know, he says he's kept all his promises. And he has, one after another after another, and he's accomplished so much. You know, a lot more than really any other president I can think of in just not quite 2 years. And I document these in the book. In fact, they are really the aftershocks that came after that earthquake. And it's things like the booming economy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can remember on election night, the pundits were speculating how the country was going to go into a recession. Exactly the opposite took place. The stock market took off because it was optimism that he was going to cut back regulations, which he's done. He was going to cut taxes, which he's done. He has unleashed entrepreneurship. And part of it is because he is a businessman. Mm-hmm. He understands how these things work. And so that's an aftershock, the cutting the taxes, the moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I mean, that was a law that was passed in the 1990s. President Clinton, President George W. Bush, President Obama, each did six-month extensions again and again and again under the idea that they were that it was more peaceful if they put this off because certainly there would be some kind of war if they moved the embassy. Well, that did not happen. There were some protests, but it was, you know, no worse than it happens other times. So Donald Trump said he'd move the embassy. He kept his promise.
What's significant about that, Stephen? Why does that matter?
Well, it's the Bible. The Bible says that God blesses those who bless Israel. And I believe that it blessed Israel because that's very important to Israel, to its sovereignty. Jerusalem is its holy city, so to speak. It's the essence of all things that are Jewish. You know, for how many centuries did they say at Passover next year in Jerusalem?
That's right.
And the Bible says that can a nation be born in a day? Yet Israel was born in a day in 1948. We all know that 70 years ago. And so on the 70th anniversary in May of this year, we moved the embassy. And Donald Trump was told it was going to cost $1 billion to build a new embassy. He said that is foolishness. They had a perfectly good building. They made a few little changes and in a couple of months made it the embassy. And apparently they're going to build a new embassy for a whole lot less than $1 billion. And that'll take a couple of years. But he moved the embassy. He kept his word. And this is one of the aftershocks.
Well, we just got back from Israel. And so I can testify personally that the Israelis are excited about that embassy move.
And they like Donald Trump, don't they?
They do like Donald Trump. And I heard nothing but great reviews about moving from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, the U.S. embassy. It seems like it gave to the Israelites, the Israelis, this confidence that America was still with them.
That's right, because, of course, they got exactly the other feeling with Obama, who seemed to put the PLO first. And when Netanyahu came to Washington, remember that he snubbed him by saying, I've got to cut off our talk so I go have dinner with my family. Well, of course, he has a right to have dinner with his family. But generally, when there's a head of state, you have dinner with the head of state. It had to be a purposeful snub. He was showing him that he wanted to be arm's length from Israel. And really, I believe that, you know, America is Israel's greatest ally.
Absolutely.
And Israel's our greatest ally in the Middle East. And I believe that it's God's plan for America to be strong for Israel.
I'd like to caveat what you just said. Christian America is Israel's greatest ally. It's the Christians in our nation. It's from the beginning to where we are today, it's the believers in Jesus that are the biggest supporters of Israel.
And the Jewish community.
And the Jewish community,
and
absolutely.
I believe that an awful lot of just average Americans who aren't Zionist believe that Israel is important. And I think there's broad-based support for Israel in our country.
Well, I've seen it, and they're waiting for the Messiah is being more and more to the front of the table in Israel too. Now that's from the Orthodox perspective, but I was so happy to see that the embassy move too, and to see America plant its flag there in.
I've heard rabbis say that when the Messiah comes, they're going to ask him, is this your first visit or your second visit? Which I think is kind of a humorous way to look at it. Of course, we believe it's the second coming.
It's the second.
But, you know, for a lot of years, because of the history and a lot of the bad things that happened, the Jews were very, very much like this with Christians. But they recognize that Christians in America, and really Christians around the world, because you can go to South Africa, Hong Kong, lots of places, and the Christian community very much supports. And in fact, in Latin America, the two countries that have moved their embassies to Israel were both from Latin America, and both of their presidents are evangelical. And so they obviously believe like you and I do. I believe that other countries will now move their embassies as well.
Well, some of these aftershocks, let's go into it from a spiritual perspective. We have more freedoms now in our faith, I believe, with the Trump administration than we had before. We can speak out.
That's right. And so here you have this man who was not known to be a Christian leader, of course. He was a secular businessman. He has become a champion of religious freedom, of our freedom. We were losing our freedoms when a baker in Colorado can't even decide what he's going to do based on his sincerely held religious beliefs. There's something really wrong, because they would have started with the baker and they would have come after all of us who don't agree with their very extreme, left-wing, anti-God, anti-Bible agenda. And Donald Trump has slowed that down and put a stop to it. The courts have also ruled kind of in our favor recently, which is a great answer to prayer as well.
I thank you for taking the time out of your very busy schedule. I know you're a very busy man altogether to write a book like this and to come and share it with us on the Cornerstone Network and the Real Life family. We got one more session, so I can't wait to get to it. We'll see you tomorrow on our Real Life program.
So is it okay if I push people to go to the stores?
Yeah.
Are you going to be offering?
I'm going to do that afterwards. Now, we'll come back out of this. We're going to try to treat this like coaching.
Okay.
And so I'll say, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, with your best gift to Cornerstone,
okay,
I'm going to give you a copy of this book.
So our next and final one is about media. Media relations, and you've got some experience with that. talking on CNN, and you said MSNBC as well.
No,
and Fox.
Yeah,
Fox.
Now our
I tell those stories in there.
And then your conversation with Trump, and then the interaction with the evangelicals. That'd be a good way to kind of wrap things up.
Are you getting good reception for secular media interviews for this book? Are people opening the doors for you?
Well,
even Christian media. Is Christian media?
It's interesting. 700 Club and Jim Baker, they're all over this kind of stuff.
Right.
Daystar and TBN, they're not too sure.
Yeah.
I consider it to be good. You know, I mean, you don't expect everybody to, you know, push your book. The secular people decide who they're going to have on right before the day they have you on, and it's got to tie into the news cycle. So when I was on, and I can talk about this, is when the Stormy Daniels thing was in they wanted an evangelical to badmouth President Trump and say he's finally gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to go spend the whole week in New York, and I expect to be on all the shows, but it'll tie into something, then they flash your book up. I think when the Republicans win, they're going to go like, oh, gee, how did this happen? And they'll be willing to talk. I'll say it's because of the things he's accomplished and the evangelicals turned out.
Well, can I just say, this is just between you and me and whoever else is listening. We need men like you that can interface with the secular community, because the men that have been interfacing with the secular community are not true voices from the Christian perspective.
They're preachers.
Well, I'm not talking about preachers, because media puts preachers in its own category. But they put leaders into a category.
They look for people who can say they're evangelical. I wonder sometimes if these people are even saved. But who mouth their view. There was one this weekend in USA Today. In fact, one of the networks apparently want me to go on and talk about it, and I'm in kind of a dilemma, because how can I travel to all these shows and be on MSNBC? But it's somebody I never heard of. who's just parroting talking points from the left.
Right. Yeah, be careful with those kind of guys. Those are...
Well, they want me to be on to be the counterpoint.
Right, I know.
You know, and I don't want to say the guy's a jerk. I don't even know who he is, but...
Let's do this one.
So we're talking about the media this time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how the aftershock in the media, this is as big as anything. Because his Twitter account has more people actively involved than ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, all told in their audience. He can get to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
I just looked it up. It's 55.3 million.
So that's up a million and a half.
Yeah, that's about what I put in the book. You know, it's a little bit complicated because some of these networks also have pretty big Twitter accounts too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, CNN will have 3 million people watching, or actually they'll have 300,000 watching.
I was going to say, that'd be a big show for them. CNN?
Uh-huh.
That'd be a big, 3 million would be a big show.
But it's like one show at one time, and the Twitter account is a little different. Mm-hmm. But he's gone around the media, that's for sure.
He's created his own network.
And they report on nearly every one of his tweets.
Yeah.
Pretty close to it.
Yeah. Okay, let's do it.
Talk about media and then work into your conversation with Trump and then tie in the interaction with evangelicals.
And that'll wrap it.
5, 4, 3.
Steve, we're talking about the Trump aftershocks. And if there's any area, you know, we've talked about the political world, we've talked about the spiritual Christian world, we've talked about the economics and all that has happened. But if there's any one area, and you and I both coming from a journalistic background, it's with the media, man. This media his presidency has changed the way media reports.
Well, you're absolutely right. And Donald Trump is a disruptor, and he's disrupted a lot of things. And part of it is that the media has a groupthink. Mm-hmm. They have a certain perspective, and it's leftist, and it's becoming more and more a mouthpiece of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Now, I went to journalism school at the University of Florida. I was trained to be a newspaper reporter, which was a big deal back then. Of course, this was long before the internet, and the media was liberal back then. My professors were liberal, but they at least tried to be objective. We were taught to be objective. And, you know, I had my little pad with the spirals at the top. Sure, and it's like, just give me the facts, you know. And then you try to write it. But I got out of secular journalism because I could see the way it was going. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse. And Donald Trump, I believe, has disrupted that, partly with his Twitter account. He doesn't need them. Mm-mm. He can speak directly to the people and call them out on things. Right. Like this thing with Elizabeth Warren. The media covered for her. They said she took a test and it proves that she's Indian. Well, she's less Indian than most Americans. I mean, it's a little time. It's 1,024th.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to even calculate 10 generations back. You and I are probably as much an Indian as she is. And now she's become a laughingstock. You know, it ruined her chances for the White House. And it was because he was able to go around the media.
Well, the way he plays the White House press corps and restricts them and then picks his favorites and does the Fox and Friends show and nobody else and then shifts the gears on him now. Now he's interviewing everybody. Everybody's doing interviews with him now. It's like he just controls. You said the word manipulator? Is that what you would? What was the word you used?
He's a disruptor.
Disruptor.
He's disrupting the status quo.
That's right.
The way that it's always been done.
Is that good? Is that a good thing?
Well, when things are going in the wrong direction, of course you want a disruptor. Mm-hmm. If everything's going good, of course a disruptor can vary. It depends on where we're coming from, but our country has been going farther and farther left. And it's not just politically, but farther from God, more immoral, more against the Bible. It used to be very respectable to be a Christian. Now, Christians are about the only people that it's politically correct to bash.
You know, over the last 60 years, just in my lifetime, you mentioned it before, Supreme Court decisions have changed our culture. We've taken the Bible out of schools. We've taken prayer out of schools. We've changed definitions of marriage. We've allowed abortion to become a status quo, all because of the court's decisions. And when we see that, we see our nation start to drift further and further away. And this progressive mentality, I think it's really, Stephen, an ideology.
It really is.
Is in education systems, it's in academia, it's in the government, and it's in the media. And that's what you're making reference to. That's almost like a worshiping. There's a worship going on there.
You're right. And of course, I'm a part of the media. You know, I'm a part of the Christian media. I'm proud of that. And I've had the opportunity to interview four presidents. But my role has been, you know, I'm a publisher. And it was my book, God and Donald Trump, that gave me entree to a lot of TV programs. And we started getting calls even from the secular media. And when the calls came in, they weren't interested in me or my book. They were interested in finding an evangelical Christian who had bashed Donald Trump. And it happened for me when the Stormy Daniels thing came out around Easter time. And I got this invitation to be on CNN and MSNBC the same week. My wife told me that I shouldn't do it because I was going into a den of vipers. And maybe it is a den of vipers. No, but I decided, no, I was going to take my chances. And it was an opportunity, of course, to talk about the book. But they wanted to know, how could Christians who are so moralistic about sexual things support a president who was so imperfect? And they said, how can you do it? And I said, well, first of all, we knew in the 1980s he was a playboy. You know, the Access Hollywood thing had already come out. But I said, I believe that he changed. Mm-hmm. And she says, well, how did he change? And I said, I believe that he's accepted Christ. And I thought, I can't believe I just said that on live television.
How big did the rise get?
Well, I was on one of these split screen things. Okay. I couldn't see anything except the camera in front of me. But I very quickly said, I don't know that firsthand, but people have said they prayed with him. And he changed about 15 years ago. He started watching Christian TV. Kenneth Copeland told me that he told him that he watched Kenneth and Gloria Copeland on TV. And I think that the Lord was doing something in his heart. Mm. But they said, well, how could he be, you know, he's so bad and all that. And I say, the whole essence of Christianity is forgiveness. Mm-hmm. All of us who are saved, or I didn't say saved, but all of us who have accepted Christ have been forgiven of things that we would not like put all over the news media. And so if God has forgiven us, we can forgive Donald Trump because he has become a champion of Christian rights and his policies go along with what we believe. And so she says to me, it was Allison Camerato on CNN, she says, well, doesn't your Bible say you should ask for forgiveness because Donald Trump one time said he had never asked for forgiveness? And I said, Allison, I'm glad you're quoting the Bible.
Now, you had a conversation with the president just recently in hopes of setting up this interview with us. Tell us about that conversation.
Well, I think that's worth a whole segment, but I'm glad to...
I wish we had a whole segment.
I'm glad to do it. I interviewed the president in 2016. I was given 10 minutes with him. It was during the campaign, of course. I very carefully had my questions written out. He was respectful. He gave me thoughtful answers. And I include that in my first book, God and Donald Trump. We never tried to get an interview for this book, Trump Aftershock. I started around May trying to get an interview, and it went on and on and on. The book finally went to press. But in September, he called me on my cell phone.
So now, stop for a second. So how's that feel to have the president call your cell phone?
Well, first of all, it never happened before, and I didn't expect it. It never occurred to me that I might talk to the president on the cell phone. I was expecting a call from one of my contacts in the White House. I answer my cell phone. I speak to a secretary who I've dealt with, and she says, do you have time to talk to the president? And of course, I said yes, and instantly he was on the phone. He was very friendly. He said he missed seeing me. I couldn't believe that he could remember that interview with all the ones he's had. He wanted to know about the book. Mm-hmm. He was all upset about Bob Woodward's book, you know, that really blasted him and the White House and everything else. And he said, I never talked to him. He said, but I'm talking to you. actually, he was vetting me to see, to grant the interview, and he decided that I'll get it. I have not had it yet, but I'll let you know if I get it.
Well, I'm confident that that's going to come. You know what? I just want to say, since I have this opportunity with you in studio here at Cornerstone, thank you for a lifelong commitment to telling the truth about the gospel and telling the truth about the full gospel. When many turned a different direction in for the sake of acceptance or PC political correctness, you've never done that. And I appreciate appreciate Charisma and all of the focus you've had on the full gospel.
There's a certain political correctness even in the church.
Oh, I know. No, that's what I'm referring to.
And someone, a Christian leader, we were talking privately, and I actually confronted him last week. He had some people that he really felt there was something they were wanting to do to call the church, and someone had told him he needed to have a black and a Hispanic and a woman, and and he was asking me for suggestions. And I said, if you feel God is calling you to do this, you need to do it with the people that you feel called to. This is political correctness. And he admitted that it was right, and that he needed to ask God who to put on there, not to have just a representation. There's nothing wrong with having blacks and women and all. And of course, the body of Christ is very broad, and we have to think of that. But my point is that there's political correctness. I think it's part of our culture. It's become a part of the way we think.
Well, you know, the human mind wants to make everybody happy. We want everybody to like us, everybody to be happy. But at the end of the day, we're going to stand before God, and he's going to say, well done, my good and faithful servant, not to everybody, but to him. And I'm thankful to be able to say thank you for staying faithful to him. It's a great privilege.
Thank you.
If the election of Donald Trump was an earthquake, his accomplishments since are the aftershocks no one saw coming. From best-selling author Stephen E. Strang comes Trump Aftershock, the president's seismic impact on culture and faith in America. Trump Aftershock offers unique insights that will cut through the media noise and reveal what they won't tell you. Gain a better understanding of the political, emotional, and spiritual dimensions at work in Trump Aftershock. Available where fine books are sold.